Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm Yumi Wilson, a journalism professor, branding expert, and your host. In this podcast, we'll boldly explore the intersection of AI and journalism, from its origins to its implications for newsrooms. We'll discuss the symbiosis of AI and human judgment, ethical concerns, and most importantly, arm you with the knowledge to navigate this brave new world. Whether you're a budding journalist, seasoned editor, or simply an AI enthusiast, join us as we fearlessly uncover the future of journalism in the age of artificial intelligence. Welcome to AI in Journalism. Join me on AI in Journalism as I sit down with Naomi Delka Miller, a bright young mind from the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. She recently took a course on AI in Journalism that helped her understand how AI is reshaping the way stories are told, challenges are faced, and the future of the press is being reimagined. Don't miss this insightful conversation up next, only on AI in Journalism. Welcome to AI in Journalism. I'm your host, Yumi Wilson, and today we have Naomi Delka Miller, a University of Nebraska-Lincoln senior majoring in journalism, PR, and advertising. Naomi, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
So I found out about you through LinkedIn because I found your blog post, and it really was intriguing to learn from an aspiring journalist communicator who took this class called AI Plus Journalism, and where you spent 16 weeks exploring AI, the intersection of AI and communications and journalism with Matthew Waite. So how was it when you were you required to take this class? Were you intrigued to take this class? How did it all start?
The first thing I want to note is that this was not a required class. This was something that my professor, Matthew Waite, was interested in pursuing. And he had actually talked to me about the idea of doing something like this the semester prior. And of course, I was absolutely interested. I've taken quite a few of his courses. It ended up being a what we call a special topics course in our college. So it counts as an elective towards my journalism degree. Definitely wasn't required though, but it was something I was really interested in learning. I think I see a lot of people passively talk about artificial intelligence, or they mention kind of the buzzwords around it, ChatGPT, Microsoft, like those bigger buzzwords that I was just curious to kind of see what's behind that, and can we go a little bit deeper and can I actually apply this, right? So that's just kind of how I got started and why I was in the class.
Let me ask you, at that time when you heard about the class, were you using tools like ChatGPT? Because I know I taught at UC Berkeley in the fall of 2023, and that's in addition to my primary job at SF State. And I remember at the beginning, they were like, well, we don't use AI. We're not going to be, incorporating AI. And at that time, it was like, no AI. And of course, the world has changed since then. But was it like that for you?
I think what's interesting to note is a lot of us had been using AI and we just didn't really realize it. And that was something that the class taught me. When I use Otter AI for interviews, transcription services, for image generation, those kinds of things, like we had kind of already been using it in a way. I'm just thinking most recently, like on PowerPoint, you may not think about it, but the design side, when you have those design ideas pop up, there's not somebody else on the other side trying to put that together for you. So it was once I took this course that I was like, wait, this has actually already trickled into my life. I wasn't using ChatGPT until I took the course. The university actually fronted the bill for each of us to have it for that semester. We really appreciated that because $20 in college is $20. So giving us access to that was huge. It kind of opened the door for us to really start thinking about it. And the other part of this, though, was that the AP Style Book had just released its AI guidance in August of 2023. So I came back from an internship and in Phoenix, I came back to college that fall. And once it kind of gets into the AP Style Book, it's like kind of this permission, I feel like in a way, to really dive into it and really see what it's meant to be. And I think it's interesting that some of the guidance. One thing that we really talked about in the class was that this was guidance. It didn't really talk about the ethics or how to actually apply it. That was up to us to figure out.
Well, first of all, I want to acknowledge your point on how there are so many apps or programs that are already using components of AI. I remember I've been using Grammarly for, you know, a long time.
That's a great example. Great example.
Exactly. Exactly. And I would say to students for a couple of semesters, I said, you know, there are actually AI, you know, components in Grammarly, for example, but it was never like where I could go, well, let's just use it and let's play with it. And this semester, that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm exploring it with my students in my media writing classes. And what's so interesting is in one of my classes, it was like the first day of class, and I said, how many of you use ChatGPT or something like that? And everyone in the class raised their hand. It was finally that they had a permission or an invitation to talk about what they had been exploring, but they just weren't able to do it before that time. And so I felt really excited. And what I also thought was interesting is, you know, I thought they were going to have all the solutions and answers. And I realized, no, it's a learning process that we can learn how to generate better material or content through prompting. But before I get into all of the prompts and all the tips and tricks that I would love to ask you about, overall, what do you think were the three things that you know were takeaways from that 16-week course that you took with Matthew?
That's hard to condense down, but I think some of the big realizations I had is that I need to be in this world in order to have a career in this communication field, because I don't think it's a question anymore if AI is going to be part of things. I think it's more of a question of like, how is it going to be part of things and how can I leverage my skill set to apply these things? Because I have found instances where it does make my work stronger. You know, for example, like instead of parsing through a bunch of data and all these tables, like how can I take that over to ChatGPT and kind of speed up that process without losing like the fundamentals of what I'm doing, right? As a journalist, I think some of those passive tasks that don't take a lot of brain space, now some of that brain space can be used for more reporting or talking to people longer or not taking notes while I'm interviewing because we have auditors, things like that. So that was one major thing. Another thing was that there's a lot of people who are scared about AI, honestly. We called a lot of small town newspapers in Nebraska just asking how they might see this applied to their own newsrooms. And we were met with a lot of, well, why would we do that? You know, people trust us. Like they wouldn't read us if they knew that we were using artificial intelligence. So kind of just more of like shock and surprise as if, how are you even asking us this? Like almost like, how dare you? Yeah, just didn't quite make sense to a lot of people. And I think I was in that boat for a while as well myself. But I think my third thing would be, I don't think that AI is there yet. And so therefore I'm not scared of it. I think there are reasons to be afraid and be cautious. But what I've found is that in whatever I use it for, I'm the one that still has to synthesize and make those connections that the model can't. And that's the big difference. While it's crunching numbers, I'm crunching connections, like the human side of things. And I don't want to speak too soon, you know, maybe someday it will get there. But as of right now, I'm more focused on what connections am I making that it can't. Like it's still a computer. So that's kind of the three major things I would say among so many.
Going back to your first point about small towns, I guess, was it your whole class that you engaged on a research project? How many newspapers were involved? How many students were involved? Can you talk a little bit about that project?
Yeah, absolutely. So our class split up into about, I want to say 4 or 5 groups, and we had 3 or 4 students in each. I mean, it wasn't a big class. I mean, we fit in one of the smallest rooms in our building, and it was an afternoon class when the building wasn't super busy. So it just kind of felt more intimate that way, where we were really able to discuss. There was not as much hand raising, it was more just discussion and people bouncing off ideas off each other. But what we spent that time doing is when we got into our groups, we also split up the state of Nebraska. So I don't know how familiar you are with the Midwest, but we have the Nebraska Panhandle, and then we have like most of our cities are on the eastern part of the state. And so we wanted to reach out to communities everywhere. So everybody each got a different section of the state, and you had to contact 3 or 4 if you could and get those responses. And then we talked about them in class the next week. And again, it's not like we were doing these things and then writing papers about it and dissecting what all of it means. It was so experimental that that's why I got so much out of it. And that's what I would want others who are also in my position as a college student in journalism is is to seriously just experiment and ask these questions, because the questions we're asking now will have answers by the time I'm in the industry. And that is just wild to me, honestly.
It is. When I started doing research on like, okay, well, how often is AI used in newsrooms? Because I too had that feeling that, as the small town newspapers did, which is, why would we do that, right? And once I started delving into it, oh my goodness, wow. I mean, for the last 2 years, I mean, you've got Reuters, you've got Associated Press, you've got The Guardian, you've got so many major publications and outlets that have already incorporated elements of AI into the production of news, some in the distribution of news, some even in the content creation of news. So you're saying that, yeah, if I want to be ready for when I get into this industry, you know, I need the right tools, I need that knowledge. Having said that, what are the tools, do you think, that a person coming out of a training program or a college, what would they need to be successful in journalism?
This class unfolded, I think, at one of the most unique times. Like, I think AI is going to be the biggest thing of our generation, personally. And when it unfolded, that class, the AP style book came out in August with their entries on it. Bard came out, I believe, in September or October. ChatGPT-4 was released. We had DALL-E that was a part of it. There's so many others. Oh, browse with Bing. That was a huge thing. Like, we walked into class one week and we're like, oh my gosh, we can browse with Bing through ChatGPT now. All of these were unfolding at the same time as our class. So every single week was just so exciting. And I'm seeing that still now, because we're in just such a rapid stage of development that there's just constantly so much new information to take in. I would say that we listened to quite a few Hard Fork podcasts, which is through the New York Times. That was really helpful. Couple of the other things we did is we just experimented with the tools on ChatGPT. So whether or not you can afford the subscription, messing around and seeing what you can create has been really important. I would also say things like Adobe Firefly, any of the beta things that you can just experiment with. Most of them are accompanied by some sort of Discord or messaging community who's all trying to figure it out. And I think that's exciting. And I know that there's a lot of fear. Like, we did talk about a lot of different situations where, I mean, Sports Illustrated, that whole fiasco happened at the same time of our class as well. And that was another thing we talked about. So a couple months ago, and hopefully I'm remembering all of these things correctly, but from my recollection, Sports Illustrated used AI to create fake personas of writers. It just became obvious and people started calling it out and they noticed it. And I think that's where some mistrust really developed, as far as like, your Sports Illustrated, why can't you do this with honesty and with trust and transparency? So I think what we're seeing now in a couple of situations is like, the more people that are aware of AI, the more people can identify the bad uses of AI. And again, that was another big takeaway. The more that we are aware of it, the more that we can call it out. I'm a little bit worried about if my generation isn't aware of what to look for. I mean, I think that's going to be a big danger. I have a friend who's working on a software called Look Closely, and it's just a game where you guess if it was human sourced or AI sourced. And that's literally just another way for our generation to start paying attention to, can we see these nuances? Are we aware of these nuances? Can we, as young journalists, young communicators, young people, are we able to identify when it's being used for good and when it's used for either misinformation or just malpractice? It's just not being used correctly. And I know that nobody knows what the correct use is, but I can confidently say I don't think Sports Illustrated was using it for the correct reason.
I agree with you. I think that that was such a blatant misuse, really, of what AI could be. Now, I'm not an expert on AI in any means, but, you know, I think just as you have said, it is important for us to understand these tools and how they can help us. You had mentioned earlier about data, the idea that newsrooms are now able to go through, you know, thousands, if not tens of thousands of pages in record time. I think that's of service to the public. And ultimately, when you think about journalism, it is about serving the public. You know, and that's why we've often been called the fourth estate, even though I'm sure some people would say, what? But the idea is we should serve as a check and balance on our system. And if AI tools can help us do that, then I would say yes to that.
one of our exercises, assignments, I can't believe this was an assignment, but we had to prompt ChatGPT to take our university police records, and because they publish those, I believe, once a week, and create a prompt to where it would just automatically do that for you and write a story based on what it was coming out with. For things that have quick turnaround and quick publishing and are constantly being updated, to either prompt or teach an AI to do something like that is time-saving. I mean, obviously, I don't think that anything should be published without human oversight. That's a thing I stand by, and I'm sure by the time I'm in the industry, I will still stand by that. But it's just been interesting to see where people take this and how it's being used and who's vetting it, if anybody.
Right. And that's what I'm hearing. I'm hearing that, yes, these tools can be very helpful in terms of productivity, in terms of content creation and all of that. But ultimately, it does need that human touch. It does need someone looking to make sure that the story is right. I mean, they could have, like, you know, these things called hallucinations. So when you did the prompt with all this and it created a story, and you were looking at that story, were there any problems with the story? Did you want to change language? Did you want to change structure? Or did it get it right?
No, it did not get it right. I mean, the first time I did it, I wasn't quite sure what kind of outcome it would, like, give me. What would it spit out in the first place? And so when I use these kinds of resources, I kind of just let it spit something out first so I know what I'm working with. Like, what is it grasping onto? What is it understanding? And then at that point, I'm able to go back to the prompt and I can say, specify or pay attention to these details, emphasize this, those kinds of things, I guess, I'm able to refine. I think it's really hard to get it right on the first try because you don't really know how it's going to take that information in. So practicing doing that and then seeing what it spits out and really adjusting your query based on that, I found was really useful. So, I mean, it spit out quite a good chunk of the information I was asking it to, but I had to ask it to restructure, add a little bit more of voice to its writing because it was pretty dry.
So it worked out then. I mean, that experiment, if you will, it just takes time.
Yeah, no, we all had success in that class. Right.
Are there any tips to follow in terms of writing a prompt? I've seen so many places and webinars and taken tons and all of that where they tell you, here is the way to write a prompt. What is your experience with that? And what are your tips on that?
I don't think that there's a right way to write a prompt. It really depends on what you want. Like, what do you want out of it? What are you asking the model to do for you? And one thing that we really paid attention to is that the model wants to do it right. If you'll notice that it'll say, please, or, oh, I'm sorry. Like, how can I do this better? It wants to get it right. You just have to be able to communicate what is right for you. So when it's not right, giving it the little nudge to go in a different direction. That's kind of my biggest tip on that is, make it work for you. Like, this is your tool. It's not the one controlling what the output is. You are. And I think that's a huge lesson for all of us to know that in the prompting, we do have a bit of control over what we want the outcome to be.
I think that's such great advice. And I remember doing an experiment in my class. I had all the students in my class, they asked ChatGPT in the basic version, you know, the non-paid version, to create a two-column TV news script. So I wanted them to see if they could get, you know, ChatGPT to do this. And I remember one student in particular, he was really frustrated because he was like, it's not working for me, you know? And it was almost like he was incredulous. Like he was thinking, Yumi, I don't think you know what you're talking about. You know, like, how did you get it to do that? Because I can't get it to do it. Maybe it's because you had a paid version. And then I showed him on the free version. No, I think you can do it. But what it taught me was, what happens though when people who are using ChatGPT run into a situation, well, it's not delivering what I want, so I'll give up. The other thing I noticed is if I start a new discussion, sometimes that is the best way to get even better results, because my experience has been, if I'm having a conversation asking ChatGPT to do something and it's not really working out, it's still remembering all of the discussion beforehand. So if I want to just start with the clean slate, oftentimes I'll just start a new discussion. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's important to remember that there's limitations. Like any piece of technology, there are limitations with AI, and knowing if you're asking too much of it, I think is really important. I think before you even start, you need to think about, like, is this something that's feasible for where the model is at right now? I mean, you can look at the versions and what's included in it and when the last update was. Like, those kinds of things are very important pieces of information to be able to make your request, right? one thing that I learned, and I had no idea that this was a thing before I took the class, but we did some text to image generation and we worked with seed numbers. So if it spit out something we liked, we assigned it a seed number and we would say to the model, this equals number 20 because it thinks in numbers. So trying to put yourself in the situation to talk to it in a way that, and that sounds so like sci-fi, but to talk to it in a way that it understands. So I would say, this is a number, this is seed number 25. Can you use seed number 25, but make the bookcase blue? I don't know if that works for your requests in text, but when you are doing text to image generation, you can bring it back to focus because it will go and hallucinate or spit out an image you really didn't ask for. But if you bring it back to that seed number and you remind it what you asked for in the first place, and it, you give it a recognition of, hey, this is what I was looking for. You were on the right track. Now, can you do one more thing for me? And that was a really great learning point.
That's wonderful to know. I'm definitely going to try that because, yeah, sometimes I'll get frustrated because I'll be like, I ask it more and more and it keeps getting worse and worse. And it keeps getting further away from where I want it to go. Like my original was what I wanted and I wanted some refinement on that. Also, I noticed you had worked with KRNU General Manager Rick Alloway experimenting with AI generated voices.
Yeah. So this was about midway through our semester and I can't remember what the name of the AI is, but it's like a couple dollars a month. And if you feed it 60 seconds of clear audio, it can completely replicate somebody's voice. So, I mean, it's not good, but I know that because I'm in the class and I know what to look for. So again, that goes back to earlier in our conversations, like you need to know what to look for. So we used that software and we actually created just a Google survey, Google form, and we sent it out to our peers. And I was even in the room with people and I asked them to do this. And it was so interesting to see them click the AI one. They clicked the AI voice. And to me, it was obvious, like, no, it's not that one, guys. Like the intonation is really bad. Everything is so flat. Everything, there's no breath. Like, but a lot of this is not common knowledge. And so again, that goes back to people should know, like, I want people to be aware of these things. So when the time comes when AI is used for not helpful things, we can be aware of it. So that was a really cool experiment. And it ended up being about 50-50. So 50 of the people that we pulled chose the AI version and about 50 pulled the authentic version.
And it's almost like when we are able to learn about AI and the uses of AI and experiment with it at the university level, feels and sounds like we are also increasing media literacy, which is, you know, long been the goal of many journalism and communications programs. Is that the way it's looked at in your school, or is it still kind of relatively like experimental with Matthew Waite and all of that?
It definitely still feels experimental because there's not a class this semester for it. You know, I don't know if that was like a one and done kind of thing, but again, it was a special topics course and it may or may not be back. It may or may not come out in other ways. But what I can say is that there's definitely professors in their unique classes bringing some of these tools out. So it's not, you don't have to have a class titled Journalism and AI to talk about journalism and AI. Like you can embed that into a lot of different classes. And I think the sooner that we start seeing it as something to coexist with and how to implement for our benefit, I think the stronger that some of our experiments will be here at university.
I agree with you. I think that what I'm trying to do, you know, I've been a professor since 2004. And before that, I was a reporter at the Chronicle and the Associated Press. And, you know, in all of these years, I just feel like whatever we can do to help the next generation, number one, get jobs, but number one, do great things. Cause that's the whole point to me. I mean, it's not about money, is it? Just, you know, but it's about changing the world in a sense. I know that's the lofty goal, but you know, if you're trying to expose wrongdoing, if you're trying to, you know, call people out when they're not honest to the public or the community, that's the kind of work we want to be doing. And to not have conversations about these tools that might be helpful to use them in an ethical way, for example, is not really helping them. That's my embodiment of what I'm doing now. I don't know what colleagues and others would say, but that's the way I see it now.
Both of my parents, one's a professor and then one's a teacher. So I grew up in an environment where you constantly want to learn. You constantly are curious. And I think that's my biggest asset when it comes to this discussion about AI and journalism is that I am deeply curious about how it's going to be useful. And I'm also kind of I'm a little bit skeptical, but I also don't want, you know, the people at the top to be making decisions about how we use it. I'm kind of a big proponent of letting the people figure it out. Like, how is it going to be useful for us in our respective careers? What can we do to make it applicable before it's monetized, if that makes sense? I mean, we're already seeing that monetization between ChatGPT 3.5 and ChatGPT 4. We're also noticing that a lot of credible media sources...
And let's not forget Gemini.
Gemini, yes. Another thing I pay attention to, which I think, I hope other journalists do as well, is if you are going to be using ChatGPT or any of these other models, it's really good to know where it's pulling from. There's quite a few that now block AI scraping. They block Common Crawl. They block Microsoft from scraping their data, which I want journalists to be paid. So I respect that. There is something to be said, though, that what is our information output going to get to be? Like, what kind of level of information will we be getting if everybody starts to block these things? And as we've seen with the New York Times case, that's being challenged. So I want to be in a world where when I ask ChatGPT questions, it's pulling from reputable sources with good information so that's not continuing the spiral of misinformation. I think that's a really big challenge that's going to be ahead.
That is, in fact, a really big challenge and also a kind of good place to end, I think, at least for now. Thank you for bringing up so many issues that I think impact not just education, but journalism and communications as we think about what AI can do. When I read your post, I thought, yes, I need to talk to Naomi. So I'm so thankful you were able to be on this show and help inaugurate AI in journalism, and wish you great things in the future.
Thank you so much, Yumi.
Thanks for listening to AI in Journalism. If you liked what you heard, please hit that subscribe button. You can also connect with me on LinkedIn to share your thoughts and suggest future topics or even guests. And remember to always keep questioning and keep growing.